If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. Welcome back. I'm sitting here ready to scream. I went through and I got several emails down, and what I normally do is I don't check the email here at the studio on the computer. I will copy and paste it onto a document and bring it. I forgot to put that onto the little thumb drive that I bring in. So I'm trying to log into my email, and this computer wants to tell me that my username and password is no good. It's the same username and password I've been using since I started this show. So I want to just sit here and start breaking things that sort of, inanimate objects that don't work the way they're supposed to work, or programs that tell you you're messed up when in fact it works on every other computer you ever try. That sort of thing just drives my blood pressure through the ceiling. I just want to start grabbing very solid and very long-weighted and, just big objects and smashing the living hell out of things. Like this monitor. However, it should actually be the box, not like the monitor screwed up. The monitor's just the messenger that the box is a piece of garbage. Anyhow, with that off my shoulders, Pete, one of our good, solid listeners, sends me an email and was asking me my thoughts on the AR-10 platform. He says he wants to get a 308 semi-auto battle rifle, and what are my thoughts? He's not leaning so much towards a battle rifle of a AR-10. That would be an AR-15 version of a gun chambered in 308, or for the military version, 7.62x51mm. So, again, I have said when it comes to the AR-15s, it is an imperfect system. It is an inherently unreliable system. A guy I worked with for years refers to the AR-15 as perfection, yet when he teaches, he still has to teach all the different malfunction clearances and help people through as they get malfunctions. It's far from perfect. If you wanted to have a nearly perfect rifle out on the battlefield, you'd probably have Gaston Glock design the thing, because it would be simple and reliable and lightweight and usable and accurate enough for any battlefield conditions. So, when it comes to the AR platform, not a big fan of it, especially in 308. We went through the Ronin status, how to build a Ronin AR-15, which someday I hope to actually get all the Ronin parts and everything actually listed and up on the website so you can have it as a reference. To go into a 223 version, it's imperfect, fine. You can get all the parts, make it Ronin status, make it more reliable. Not all those parts are available in building it out to a 308. So what are the popular 308 caliber battle rifles? You have essentially everything that's out there now is kind of a generation 2 version of a battle rifle. There is a couple rifles out there that just squeak into the generation 3 battle rifle, the newest, biggest, baddest, reworked sort of thing. So we're going to go through some of those. On the standard case, you've got the M1A, which is the military M1 Garand, which was chambered in 30-06. You go to the M1A, it's now dropped down, chambered into the 308. And that's a very, very hardy rifle. You load it with a stripper clip that actually has 8 rounds. Put it in, push the thing down. The stripper clip actually stays in there. It locks back after the 8th round has been fired. Ping! The old stripper clip shoots out and makes this pinging sound and hits the ground. You can also go with the removable box magazine style of an M1A, which is then called an M14, which was the true M14 was actually select fire with full auto features. That's a little bit better of an improvement because it's got a removable magazine. You have the FAL, the FAL sort of rifle, which is a great rifle. Again, it's much like, it shares very similar characteristics in one aspect to the M1A or M14, and that is it is a long and heavy rifle, and because you're carrying a magazine, which is full of 308, and it is forward of your chest line, forward of your elbow, it's got a lot of forward weight to it. Same thing that does the AR-10. Then you move into other things. You've got the HK-91 and the HK, they call it the G3, HK-93 or the G3. Still good, solid battle rifle platforms. A little heavy, a little large, a little cumbersome, but great battle rifles. All of these rifles I'm talking about have proven themselves on the field of battle and performed very well. I'm just not a big fan of a battle rifle that's big and heavy and takes some actual real-life effort to hold the damn thing up to shoot. When you're in the midst of a gunfight, one that's not long and drawn out, like a shorter gun, none of that's going to bother anyhow. Really not. You're not going to feel any recoil. You're not going to hear any bang. None of that. Anybody that's ever hunted knows that. If they have a rifle, when they sight it in, it pushes them around a little bit. You can really feel the recoil. You know the damn thing's loud. When you go out and you hunt a deer or elk, whatever, you go out hunting, you never recognize any of that. Now, some people have gotten popped in the eye with their scope and never realize it until their buddy tells them, hey, yeah, nice hit on the deer. You got a scope eye. Oh, what, really? So you're not going to notice that unless, like, the weight and the length of the rifle if you're actually in a fight. But training with it, if it's a long, drawn-out affair when you've got your rifle, you're going to start noticing. Springfield did come out a few years back with the SOCOM 16, and then they came out with the second version. They called it the SOCOM 2, and that is the M1A with a shorter barrel, and it's a carbine length. It's a smaller rifle. Very compact system, very nice. However, it is damned heavy. Part of the reason it's so heavy is they actually weight the stock so that it's not front-end heavy. It's not heavy out towards the muzzle. Those guns, the actions, or everything are pretty heavy. So actually weight the stock so it fits back, which then makes even the shorter rifle, it's very solid. It's almost like it's made out of concrete. You can also get very good accuracy out of those shorter SOCOMs. A friend of mine and I bench-rested his, and at 100 yards with match-grade ammo, we were sub-minute of angle, which means we're about 3/4 of an inch. It was under an inch at 100 yards with match ammo. Now, it's not what's going to go through there, but the gun holds a lot of accuracy. So there's a lot of options. Then we start moving into kind of the Generation 3, the newer style, newer mechanics of the guns. Also, another one out there, if you want to get a 308, an excellent, it's kind of a, it's still a Generation 2 rifle, but it is fantastic when it comes to reliability, and that is the Galil. The Galil is based on the Kalashnikov action, the AK action, AK-47 action, reworked, retooled, rebuilt. The Israeli military, IMI actually did, Israeli Military Industries, IMI reworked this thing to where there's no interchangeable parts between a Galil and an AK, but it looks very similar, it operates very similar. The thing is, any of the little things that could have been, that were considered wrong or could have been improved on the AK, they completely fixed on the Galil. The Galil comes in three different calibers, based on several different models, and that's a 7.62 by 51 or 308, a 7.62 by 39, same caliber as the AK-47, and the 5.56 by 45, the 223. Same thing that the AR-15 or M16 would be in. So those are the three calibers that the Galil comes in. To get a true, honest-to-God Galil, those things haven't been imported into the States since 91 or something with the assault weapons ban. Thank you very much for doing that. Actually, maybe it was 92. I think it was when Clinton was in office. So if there's a Galil here, you can still get them. They're just not importing any new ones. There is an option, however, I believe it is Vulcan Arms. I think it's Vulcan Arms. They're an American company, they have their own shop, and they actually produce several different rifles that are no longer allowed to be imported into the States for nearly 20 years now. They actually make them here in the States, which is now then legal. Best thing to do when you get those guns is to get them, find somebody who is an expert gunsmith in the field of that particular type of gun. Like if you get the Galil, find somebody who is an expert gunsmith in the AK. Send the gun to them. Have them take it apart, smooth it, rework it. They're good guns when you get them, but they can be better. And the thing that you're looking for, especially in a battle rifle, is reliability. Reliability first, accuracy second. if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter if it can hit anything or not. That's the way I look at it. Reliability first, accuracy second in a battle rifle. Now, if it's a hunting rifle, I'm going to be looking at accuracy first, reliability second. But for a battle rifle, I'd rather make sure the damn thing works as opposed to whether it's got a, you know, it's hitting a 4-inch plate at 100 yards or a 2-inch plate at 100 yards. So the Galil is a before you start getting into the Generation 3 rifles, as I would like to call them, it's a good gap. It's a good measure in between. So again, you've got the AR-10, you've got the M1A, or the smaller versions such as the SOCOM, then you've got the detachable box magazine style such as the M14, and the SOCOMs have a detachable box magazine as well. You've got the FNFAL, you've got the, let's see, the H&K G1, 91, you've got the G3, and you've got the Galil sort of thing. Now, those are very good battle rifles for the field. When we come back and we get into the next segment, we're going to talk about kind of the couple of rifles out of the Generation 3 of sorts, the new modern tooling, the new modern designs, designed from the ground up, and we'll talk about those. Those are really my favorite. So stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. We'll finish this discussion on the 308 battle rifles. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, those of you who are, honest to God, regular, real live, most of the day listeners of RBN know that RBN speaks the truth. We have a lot of different styles of programming, a lot of different styles of hosts, a lot of different information that gets out there, but the big value is all the information that you get is the right information. It's not the lamestream medium. We're not a bunch of bogus clowns sitting here in front of, at least the other 20-some-odd hosts aren't clowns. I'm a bit of a clown. The rest of them are not. So we like to get you all the good, honest information. The reason I'm buttering you up is because RBN's having a pledge drive. We are expanding the network. We're going on to a second network, which is going to be the Elected Representatives Network, the ERN. And that's going to feature a bunch of elected representatives throughout the country. They will have weekly radio shows, and we're going to stretch that throughout the entire network. And we're putting that thing up. This will give you an opportunity to actually hear good elected officials and even some folks who are trying to get into office, and give you an opportunity to interact with them from around the country. So, with that, if you would like to donate to the pledge drive, please call during business hours. You can call 800-724-2719. Again, 800-724-2719. That's office hours, you know, like a kind of a 10 to 6 central time sort of deal. You can also always go on to republicbroadcasting.org and donate online. Again, republicbroadcasting.org. So, now that we have all of that good information out there and everyone's done pledging, send me an email. Let me know that you went on and pledged. I'd appreciate that. Bill@2aradio.com. I want to make sure that the folks that listen to this fine show are helping to contribute to the network as much as we can. Okay, back on the battle rifles. Now we're getting into kind of the Generation 3 of battle rifles. FN makes a wonderful battle rifle by the name of the SCAR, S-C-A-R, which stands for something. I don't remember. So the SCAR 17S would be the one that you can get. They made the SCAR. They called it the SCAR 17, which is it's a select fire 308 battle rifle. It's compact. It runs off of, magazines. You can have a detachable magazine, throw it in there. The 17S, S stands for, I guess, civilian only. That begins with the letter C. But the 17S is the one that you and I can get. You can also get the SCAR 16S, which is in 5.56 millimeters in 223. We're talking about 308 specifically. The SCAR 17 is an excellent rifle. It is compact. It works phenomenally well. It's a little bit heavy, but you can also put all kinds of cool different scopes or, you know, a light or anything like that. You can have like the vertical fore-end down front. It's a good rifle. They're pricey. Plan on, you know, between $2,400 and $3,000. The other one that I really like, the one that I am holding out for, and I say this is kind of a best for last when it comes to me, is Kel-Tec's RFB. And that stands for the, let's see, RFB. I forget what the R, rifle, I guess. But the F is forward ejecting, B is bullpup. This gun is the only true 308 rifle ever developed, which is fully ambidextrous, 308 battle rifle. The RFB is a bullpup design, meaning that the trigger is actually way forward of the action. The entire rifle, the barrel of the rifle, is 18 inches. The entire length of the rifle is 26.1 inches, just over 2 feet long. Unless you put a flash suppressor over the barrel, it's now 27.1 inches, amazingly so. You can also get one, they have a version that has a 32-inch barrel, and that entire gun... That entire gun ends up being, a little under 40 inches, 38 inches or something? You don't need the 40-inch, the 32-inch barrel. That's crazy. You'd have to have an ultra-slow-burning powder to really take advantage of that. So, the Kel-Tec RFB runs off of the same magazines as the FNFAL, the FAL magazines, which are very reliable magazines. And this gun has two extractors. Once the round gets fired, an extractor on each side grabs the shell casing from each side, pulls it back, then it hits the ejector. The ejector is towards the bottom, so it ejects the shell casing up. It goes into a solid protected tube that the shell casing just sits in. Then when the next round is fired, it sits in there and pushes the last one forward. And it goes forward to about, I guess, 6 inches behind the barrel, and these casings will just literally just kind of drop out. It's inertia-driven. It is a fantastic design, designed from the ground up as a bullpup. So, and there, you can probably get them for around $1,500. So that's going to be my next rifle. All right, guys, coming up after the break, I'm going to play for you a segment where I interviewed the Executive Vice President of the National Sports Shooting Foundation at SHOT Show 2010. So it will be an interview with the NSSF. He's also the lead counsel for NSSF. So that's going to be for the next segment. You'll hear that interview. Then we'll be back for segment 5 and talk a little bit about it. So stay tuned. This is a good interview. I'll be right back. This is your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, we had a change up. I was going to play that interview with the Executive Vice President of NSSF. However, during the break, Jerry from Indiana called and wants to ask about rifles. And quite honestly, you, the callers, having questions for me when it comes to guns, gear, whatever, is more important than a recorded interview. I can play that anytime. So, Jerry from Indiana, welcome to 2A Radio.
Good morning.
Thanks for screwing up the whole vibe of the show, man. What's on your mind?
well, first of all, a little background. I'm a senior, 75-year-old, and I'm in relatively good shape.
Good for you.
My eyesight's all right. And when I, in my salad days, after leaving the service, I went to a camp Atterbury to qualify for a free M1 rifle. And in the course of that shooting, I think we shot at 1,000 yards the last time. The last thing we had to do was shoot at 1,000 yards. And I didn't get any Maggie drawers in that deal. But now in my senior years, I need to find a rifle that, and I'm not going to be shooting at no 1,000 yards or probably not even at 500 yards. What I perceive, if the need be, it will be relatively close range, and I need to be able to have something that I can get ammo for, and that isn't terribly heavy. I was focused there for a while on an AR. What is it, 47?
No.
AK-47.
AK-47 or an AR-15.
Yeah, and I'm not really a gun buff per se, but I enjoy shooting and all this kind of stuff, but it's not one of my priority items. I know how to handle it.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all,
sure.
Is this gun for enjoyment or for Armageddon or for both?
Both.
Okay. And so it's not going to be a primary thing, but it's going to be something you want to enjoy. So I'd imagine you want something that's reliable, has a simple learning curve. And then
yes.
On top of that, will work if you actually have to shoot somebody, and probably not run you a tremendous amount of money.
You spelled it out exactly, because I've got relatively shallow pockets.
Okay. I would probably recommend one of the following. I would recommend an AK-47. You can get into a good, solid AK-47 for a few hundred dollars.
Yeah.
You can get into a really crappy AK-47, even cheaper than that. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend going with the crappiest gun you can get. The ammunition for that gun is 7.62x39. It's readily available. There also is something that you could look at, Jerry. It's called the AK-74.
AK-74?
Right. Now, the difference between the AK-47 and the AK-74 is 27 numbers.
That's what?
That's a joke. 27 numbers, 47, 74.
Oh.
Okay. Now, the AK-47 is 7.62x39. The AK-74 is 5.45x something. It's a smaller round. It's comparable to the regular 223 ammo that we can shoot in the AR-15 or the M16. Now, here's the thing. It's a smaller round, which means you can put more in the gun. It's lighter weight. It actually performs better than the 223, and that ammo and the gun are both supremely inexpensive considering the economy that we're in now and how expensive guns and ammo really are. A buddy of mine bought an AK-74 for, I think it was like $275, and he bought 1,000 rounds for $200, and then he got several magazines for it.
Uh-huh.
So an AK-74 would get you a very reliable gun. It would get you into that gun for not a whole bunch of money. It would get you a high round count in the magazines, and it would get you an effective tool to be able to shoot out to a couple hundred yards if you want to. And if you needed to pick it up and shoot some scumbag that's coming after you, it's going to work very well. And on top of all of that, if your eyesight is okay, but you want a little bit of help, you could very easily mount on top of that thing just a very simple reflex sort of sight, like a red dot. So you bring the thing up, you've got the red dot, hold the red dot on whatever it is you want to shoot and start pressing the trigger.
Okay.
So for you, Jerry, I would recommend the AK-74, all-around, good, easy-to-use rifle. When you used rifles in the military, were you using the M1 version of the guns?
Yes, uh-huh. That's
okay.
What I carried in Europe, and then that's the one I won. I won one that had never been shot.
Oh, very nice.
That was set up to be a sniper, I'm told, with some fiberglass in the stock and
Oh, I wonder if it was the Carlos Hathcock White Feather edition.
I don't know. It was made by Smith Corona. That was what was on the thing. They made,
no kidding. The typewriter company.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, real quick, would you tell me again what the ammo is for that 74? 5.45 by what?
You know what? I don't really recall, but
okay,
I tell
that's
you,
all right. I'll get the rest of it. Just, the AK-47, what was the ammo?
7.62 by 39, and really
7.
What that
62
is? By 39.
39, okay.
Now, what that is it's really, it's a 308 short. You know how a, you know how a 308 is kind of a 30-odd-6 short?
No, I really don't.
Okay, well, it is. Let me see. I am looking up. I'm trying to research. I'm stalling right now to find you the actual AK-74 ammo.
Uh-huh.
And I put AMU in Google, A-M-O-O. 5.56 by 45.
Say it again.
5.56 by 45, I believe, is what it is. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 5.45 by 39. My mistake. The
okay,
AK-74 is 5.45 by 39 millimeter.
And that's relatively available stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can find that stuff all over the place.
All right, next question real quick so you can move on with your programming. When I looked at these things, those AK-47s were just all over the place in terms of where they were made at. I think there's a difference between a stamped mechanism, and somebody said
forged receiver.
A forge, yeah. And they, you know, people told me to watch for the consistent serial numbers. Some were made in the Ukraine, others were made someplace in South America. There was just so many different criteria that you had to be aware of that someone that isn't into this that heavily. Was totally ignorant of.
Well, I'll tell you this, Jerry. Almost every single country that has even an inkling of industrialization makes or has made an AK-47. They're all over the place. Now, the ones that are probably, and this is almost universal across the board. Universally across the board, some of the crappiest guns you can possibly buy come out of Egypt and Turkey. Of course, that holds true for the Mausers that they had in World War II, the AK-47s that they're making now. It's not really a big deal between a stamped receiver or a forged receiver. The real aficionados will go with a forged receiver. It's heavier. It's more durable. The thing is, the stamped receivers have worked fine for 60-plus years. So I wouldn't go with the cheapest gun. I wouldn't necessarily go with a forged, hardened steel, heat-treated, chrome-lined, fancy $800 AK-47.
I hear you. Uh-huh.
Find somewhere in the middle. You can do a little bit of research on the internet. You can certainly find some AK-47 aficionados that would know. You know what? It just hit me. I know a guy. I used to work with him years ago, who was one of the finer AK-47 gunsmiths in the U.S. And I think his name is Jim. I think I might just give a shout to Jim today and see if I can get him on the horn as an interview later this week. We can talk a little bit more about the specifics of good AK-47s, some of the things to look for, some of the things to do. There are a group of guys that I know that are huge AK-47 buffs. Almost undoubtedly all of them at one time or another have sent their rifles to Jim for a little bit of reworking and retooling, and they listen to him about which ones to get. But these are guys with a few bucks that can actually throw them into them.
I see. Okay.
But find something down the middle of the road. The AK-74, I don't think there's more than two or three different companies that are making the AK-74. If you find something that comes from a former Eastern Bloc country, that means that they probably built it for the Russian military to their gun. Buy it from them. Buy one of their
Eastern
guns.
Bloc, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Something in Europe. So any old, like a Bulgarian or Romanian, or if it ends in Anian, it's better than if it ends in a Stan. You got me?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I understand.
The Aimian guns as opposed to the Stan guns is probably something you're going to want to look for. And again, the ammunition for each of those AK guns, either 7.62 by 39 or the 5.45 by 30, 5 point whatever the hell I said it was by 39, they're both relatively inexpensive. As a matter of fact, AmmoMan.com has 900 rounds of the ammunition for the AK-47 for $209, and shipping is included with that. So that was something that was on just last Friday. I was in here doing the show with Dave Champ, and we did kind of a casual Friday on his show. And then right after that, we were online looking up ammo prices. So that you can get good deals on that sort of stuff. And, you know, if you want to buy a decent AK-47, what part of Indiana are you in?
It's in northwest corner, Valparaiso, Indiana.
That's not far off of Interstate 80, is it?
No. As a matter of fact, it's within 3 miles.
Okay. I would just suggest looking around there, and you're up near, what's a state just above you? Help me out.
Michigan.
Here. Michigan. Look around in the newspapers, the classifieds in your region, and look and see if somebody happens to be selling an AK-47 or an AK-74.
All right.
And look it up. And then there's all kinds of stuff online that you can look at when it comes to different things you can do with the gun what make you want to get. And also if you want to get just a very simple, like red dot to mount on top to make sight acquisition that much easier.
Red dot, okay.
Yes.
I noticed when maybe a week or two ago, I think it was within that period of time when you were talking about your own arsenal, you mentioned you, I believe, had an AK, and you made a point to mention the country that it was made in.
Oh, no, I do not have an AK-47.
Okay.
I don't.
Maybe I misunderstood.
I would probably, if I were going to get one, I would spend the dough and either get one that was made in Romania.
Romania.
There's a couple of them that are made here in the States, which are really nice, the names of which escape me at this point.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? Even better than a red dot, they have what's called a halo sight, H-A-L-O. It's a holographic sight where you bring it up. It's almost like you're looking through just a little small piece of glass that has a red dot on it. And once that thing is sighted in, where the dot sits, and it's not a laser that shines down range, but where you see that dot sitting is roughly where the bullet's going to impact. So the halo sight's even easier to use.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I have a model 870 20-inch barrel, 12-gauge that will handle, it has a rifled barrel that will hold deer slugs and a buckshot, of course. But I was thinking that if push comes to shove, that whatever I'm going to need would be within like 100 yards.
I hope you're a fast sprinting 75-year-old veteran, because 100 yards is a long way. My guns are nowhere near 100 yards away.
You're what?
I said my guns are nowhere near 100 yards away.
No. I meant that if I needed to use them.
Oh, within 100 yards. I'm sorry.
That would be the range. It would be probably even less than that.
Yeah, well, a rifled 12-gauge barrel of, say, 24 to 26 to 28 inches is good. But, you know, I mean, taking a full ounce of lead slug into the chest is definitely going to put anybody on their backside.
Yeah.
I would much rather have a rifle if I'm going to be shooting anything beyond 50 or 75 yards. Well, even a rifled slug barrel. But you know, it's not really the gear so much. It's the ability of the shooter. As long as you've got a decent gun, you've got decent ammo in it, and you have the techniques to be able to shoot at that kind of a distance, then it's all good. The rest of it's kind of superfluous. And you also have to have the gumption to do it. And it sounds like you certainly do, Jerry.
Well, I was going to add, and the frame of mind to deal with the situation.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
That's the key thing that everybody wonders in the back of their mind, whether they have it or not.
What service were you in?
The 3rd Armored Division.
3rd Armored?
Army,
You saw plenty of action then.
No, I didn't.
No?
Necessarily. I did see some. I was on a check, a border patrol.
Oh, okay.
And there was some exchange, but it wasn't a declared kind of thing.
Well, I want to thank you for serving.
Well, thanks.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, even in today's day and age, anytime I see anybody in uniform, even in Las Vegas when I'm in and out of the airport, there's always people in uniform in and out of the airport traveling around. And I always make it a point, if it's not inconveniencing them, I always make it a point, even if it inconveniences me, to go over, because truly it's not an inconvenience, shake their hand and thank them for serving.
Well, that's nice. Incidentally, before I leave, I was just going to comment on one more thing that you mentioned in your program.
We have about 20 seconds.
Okay, I was just going to say that the high school that I went to had a range in its basement. It was in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
It was a Horace Mann, and it's still there. The school shut down, but the range is still there. And I think police came and used it from time to time. But you don't find that anymore in any of the schools,
you're
unfortunately.
Right. You don't. Jerry, thanks very much for the call.
Well, thank you for helping me.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's absolutely true, folks, that some of the largest indoor ranges in America are in the basements of older junior highs and high schools. Stay tuned, folks. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, I want to talk to you about the 308 load that I've been working on developing. I wanted to have a subsonic 308 load because I have a precision rifle with a threaded barrel and I have a can. I have a suppressor for that gun. So I've wanted to have a subsonic 308 load. The only subsonic 308 load out there that you can actually purchase is by Lapua. That's the only one I found. And Lapua sells the bullets. They sell the components for this load. At least, again, the bullet, which is specifically designed. It is a 200 grain 30 caliber bullet with a boat tail on it. Very severe boat tail. Specifically designed to fly accurately subsonic. Most 308s will fly supersonic. Once they hit the subsonic range, they start to tumble and waver and falter all over. This bullet's designed to never actually make it to supersonic speeds. So, they will not publish the load data. I was even at the Lapua booth at the SHOT Show and asked them. They said, no, we won't publish the load data. Because it's designed for a specific length barrel, specific twist rate, which is fine. That's fine. But if they at least gave you a starting area, this is what it's designed for, realize you need to account for these things when it comes to your gun. I found one for my gun. I actually got consistently to, 985 feet per second, which is good. It's very good. So I actually, that was with 9 grains of the particular powder I'm using. I'm going to go to 8.9 and drop it down about 20 or 25 feet per second, somewhere around the 960 mark, which is what I'm shooting for. Pardon the pun. So what I am going to do when I get all of this data done and I get accurate, I'm actually using 2 different bullets in 3 different styles. One bullet is coated in lard. Another bullet is coated in lard, plus that the same second bullet, I have a version not coated in lard. I'm going to be shooting for accuracy on these. Once I get everything done, I'll let you know what I came up with and the pitfalls, and we'll talk a little bit about specifically loading for subsonic rounds. Why? And some of the things to look for. And then I will probably actually publish at least some of those things on the website. Again, that's 2aradio.com. So, please, keep in mind, if you do something like this, your twist rate, your barrel length, all that good stuff is something that you need to... I don't know why that's playing just yet. That is something that you need to be aware of when you're loading. The barrel length, the twist rate, all of that stuff needs to be incorporated into the load. All right? So, with that being said, now here comes my sign-off. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Folks, thanks for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned for the Lenman News Hour, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show, coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday. I will